So the title of the talk is Being a Free Person in a Collapsing World. If we can get a touch of that from this retreat, we've done the job. I want to start with a very simple example. Does that hurt? Okay, you can say, sure. Makkah is painful. But in a way, that's a habit that defines experience because of the habit as painful or pleasant or this or that, because we build a habit all our life. If I ask, what actually is the sensations in this hand? That's more interesting. It's saying all kinds of things. I can actually feel that it's pleasure. It's joy. It's the cells, the tissues are saying, ah, yeah, I'm alive. The habit says, Makkah, a hit is painful. But the experience is actually bigger than that. Of course, if the pain is very strong, sure, I'll take a pill. Like I was saying today in the group, the Buddha also had back pain and he had a doctor. It's not that we shouldn't look after ourselves. But the sensations of life, the networks in the brain are dynamic and free. And we can have less closed in the habit that says, this is painful, this is pleasant, I am like this, this is the world, this is a tree, this is a cup. And you can feel that that's a closed place, or it's a contracted place. So experiences can go in many directions if we allow them, if we don't shut them down. One of the best descriptions of karma that I know is simply the energy of habit that makes things apparently to be like they are, like a mango fruit will not make an apple tree. Why? Because of habit of karma. And we make habits. We grow habits. And then they carry on and on and on. Because karma is a pressure to keep going in the way it was. I wake up every morning as Stephen because there's a habit that says you're Stephen. There's a little space maybe where we wake up in the morning, we don't know who we are. But very quickly, it all comes back. It's running on automatic, building habits. Karma runs. Trungpa Rinpoche once said, what is reborn in the next life? Simply our bad habits. That's all that's reborn. That's why we're reborn. It's quite hard to see this with deep psychological pain, because psychological pain is not the pain of the body. It's pain of the self. And then We've got a problem. How does the self see itself more freely? So it's in a way easier to see that the sensation here can be this or that or that. But when we're talking about the self, and when we're talking about the pain, for example, which is the collective self of the society right now, very strong collective self. And the pain shared by many, many minds and many identities and many people. And then it's really strong. And we get it also from the media 24 hours. And we are part of each other. So the pain of what's happening in the war, the Khatufim, the people in Gaza, the soldiers, they're all, and the people we know, it's quite overwhelming because it's everywhere and it's constant. And it's in the self, it's not in the body, but it's in the self, it's built into the self. That's what we wake up in the morning like that. The body's fine, but the self is getting all the makot, and the self has to clean itself and find its own freedom. And that's not so easy because it's the self that is ki'ilu overwhelmed, taken over by this suffering, the darkness. And it's not a bad thing that we're picking up messages of suffering from everywhere, because we are sensitive beings. We are sensitive souls. It's better that we pick up messages of pain rather than be closed in a kind of box. One of the problems, I won't go into it, but one of the problems of autocrats like Trump and maybe Netanyahu and others is that they just don't feel pain of others. They just don't seem to really feel the openness to what's going on and the sensitivity. They tend to have very strong shirion around. So we need ourselves, though, to have tools and ways that when we are sensitive, open souls, and we feel pain that's coming into the self, that it doesn't go into places of despair, of ya'ush, of hopelessness, of denial, of fear. It doesn't destroy us. And there's the challenge. The Dharma doesn't encourage adishut, neutrality. It doesn't. On the contrary, it may seem like that from someone outside who peeps in and say, oh yeah, all these nice spiritual people, shut down, closed eyes, it's quiet, you're in yourself. But it's not like that. It's the opposite. We are seeing things with new eyes. We are seeing ourselves. We are seeing the world. It's about we're opening inner eyes to see. And we see pain. Instead of just putting up with, oh, life is like that. So we see more, actually. But so how do we find a freedom in the middle of this? Well, a deep basic understanding that we keep saying from this Bama here, Ilan and myself, but actually the Buddha has been saying it for 2,500 years, and the Buddhist, the Dharma says it all the time. which is that we make our perception of the world from multiple conditions that arise. And from there, we build all the time a perception of the world and a perception of ourselves. So there is knowing happening, there is a knower, and there is known, something known. Something known, a person knowing it, and a knowing that's happening. And from there, they come together and they build a world. We build a world. We build our inner world. We build an outer world. And it happens in chains, sharsharot. We see something, we know something, we give it memory, we have experiences in the past, we fit it into our world, and we come to a perception and we grasp it, and we say it's like that. There's a nice image of consciousness. Consciousness itself is very free. It's just knowing. But consciousness takes the shape of whatever it looks at. And then it says, I know this. So, for example, consciousness is open like a hand, but it grasps this, and then consciousness becomes this. Consciousness is actually taking shapes all the time, just like the open hand takes a shape of what it looks at. So whatever it looks at, it becomes that. Anyway, there is a chain: consciousness, awareness, history, our experiences in the past, our karma, what happened to us, what we learned, who we are. Each one of us will look at each object in the world slightly differently, but we are in agreement that this is a bell. So we'll all agree about that, because we all built similarly. We all have similar experiences. 12 years in school, we heard this, we heard that, we learned this. My dog will see this as something for dogly, for food, for dog food. And we will see this as a Tibetan bell. So everything is based on pieces coming together, especially sankharas, meaning constructions, memories, what we learned, what we decide is the world. This is a bell, we learned that, it's in the brain. Our brain now has reshet, called Tibetan bell. And in there is the self. So the self is part of the chain. We build the world, but every time we build a world, we see there is knowing and the known and the knower. We keep building the knower again and again. So we build ourselves all the time. But that's a kind of a construction process. We're becoming somebody all the time. We're not fixed forever in this model. There was, until we were a few months old, we had no idea who we are. We may be in infinite space. Okay, we have a small mind as a baby, but we don't know we're going to be Stephen as a baby of 1 month old. Everything is open, and then it gradually gets constructed and built, and the brain gets built, and then everything gets constructed. But it goes in chains. And we keep doing it, so we're building it again and again and again, and we can unbuild it. The whole thing is very dynamic. And at any stage in the chain, we can stop it. We can challenge it. We can say, what actually is this thing? Do I really know? Or what is my perception of it with no memory and no history? See this fresh. And the same with ourselves. There is this Theravada poem that says, sow a thought and reap mila. Zorea machshava kotzer mila. Sow a thought and reap a word. Sow a word and reap an action. Sow an action and reap a habit. Sow a habit and reap a personality. Sow a personality and reap a fate. Goral. And we think it's all done. But no, it's what we sow. Ma she'anachnu zorea, ze ma she'anachnu kotzer. So we kol hazman zorea machshavot v'kibunim v'hagdarot v'az kotzer ani. And it's driven this process of learning the world and fixing the world and fixing ourselves is based on the need to survive. And the need to be somebody that wants to survive and wants to live. And it's not a problem in the end. We have to live, be somebody to live. The Buddha was somebody. He called himself by a name. It's not a problem. It's like a hand. We have a person. We have a hand. It's functional. But the problem becomes when we are like a king in a castle. It's an old Indian image that the self becomes like a king. Ah, I am the king. I have the world. I'm me and mine. I can do anything. I can go. I can have coffee. I can anything. Everything is possible. But we forget that it's like the king is in a castle with these walls. And all of a sudden, the king feels very isolated and lonely and separate from everything inside the castle. And the practice is in the image of the king in the castle, in the tradition, there's a little window on high up somewhere, and the window is open. And a small bird comes in, and the bird has two wings, and one wing is samadhi, and the other wing is sati, mindfulness. And the bird flies in and tells the king, yeah, you can get out, samadhi and sati. That's the traditional image. So, in terms of practice, in terms of our practice here, it's quite important to see the way we build our world as a dynamic process. It's not fixed. Some of you have come in the groups and really feel, you know, I've got this issue. And it needs reminder that an issue or a problem or emotional pain or something that's affecting, something that's way, like being inside the walls of something. And it's fine, we all have them. But slowly, slowly, we can see that they are made of many things. This I don't know what, despair, ya'ush. If we look at it, it's made of many things. And it's an experience that is constructed. It's not a thing that I have to carry all my life and it's just so difficult. It's actually made up of many things. And we can look at that and undo it and say, wait a minute, what is this ya'ush made of? And we'll see the same chain, sharsharot, chains, feelings, thoughts, history, sankharas, identity, and so on. In everything that we can imagine or experience is made up of other things that are not it. A person is made up of non-person elements, pieces. We're made up, everything is made of something else. Everything is made of conditions that make it from something else. The last words of the Buddha. All things are compounded, put together. All compounded things are impermanent. They fall to pieces. They change. Everything is made of something else. If you think about that, that's really kind of shocking. We are made of other things, this self. Okay, on a level of the body, you say, I'm made of water, I'm made of nitrogen, chankan, I'm made of this, I'm made of that, I'm made of my bones, are made of the same stuff shells, whatever they are. I don't know, I forgot the Hebrew, but shells of seashells. Our bones are made of the Buddha. Well, the Buddha said all compounded things are impermanent. That's the last words he said before he died. But basically you say, he said in there that there isn't anything that's not compounded, meaning made up of many things. So everything is made up of other things than other than itself. This thing is made up of multiple things, the energy of the person that made it, the metal, the someone dug it from the earth and put it together, and the fire, and then this and that, and it's still changing, and it's still being used, and it's still got things to say, and it will go to pieces at some point, and we're the same. So a person is made up of non-person components, elements. So one of the places that we can really, it really helps us is to feel the space that is not filled by objects, by self, if we are inside that, inside the self, inside the world, this is this, stuck, there's no room to see. There's no room to see the dynamic nature of myself and the world. The first thing is we really need to give space. And a lot of what's happening here is we're giving space to our inner world. And then we see things that we didn't see before. Because we're just busy doing in the world. We're busy reacting, responding to, you know, magivim. We give space. We sit 45 minutes. May not be very comfortable. Very often, when you give space, it just the first thing that comes up is all the pains of existence that we pushed away. That's why not so easy to sit a retreat. People say, oh, wonderful, you had a holiday in Indore. Wow, beautiful. Oh. You just don't know. We give space to our world, and what comes up comes up, and very often it's the things that we pushed away that come up. But if we give space, we also begin to feed our freedom. When we give space, we can see the voices that make our mind. We can see the voices that make our experience. All the voices that we've been receiving for the last, since October the 7th, where are they? They're all in us. They all come in. We need to see them and see the voices that make our perceptions and give space to that. We need to give space to the feelings that we have, and which is very positive. It can be anger, it can be fear, it can be sadness, it can be many things, it can be joy, it can be ecstasy, it can be a love. But we need to give space to these, we need to give space to feelings. One of the most beautiful lines in Etty Hillerson's book is when she was saying, when she was looking outside and she was seeing the misery of everyone in the Amsterdam in the, in 1942 with the Gestapo in the street and so on. But she said, there's a lot of despair and sadness right now and sorrow. But if we give sorrow the space that it asks for, and she used the word space, give it the space that it asks for, we're back into the stream of life. Instead of just being angry and despaired and fed up, we give it space, we allow the sorrow to be seen, to be held. So when we give space to our inner world, and we acknowledge it, we allow it, it actually doesn't take up all the mind anymore. It has less nefach, because there is, it has more space around it. So when we have a kind of, for example, ya'ush, despair about what's going on in the world, if we're under it, there's no space left. We're in it, and we're just in it, and we're angry with everybody, and we despair, and we go to bed at night fed up, and we argue with our partners, and we just feel generally bad all the time. But that means that it has nefach. It has volume, it's taken up all our consciousness. When we give space, when we have, then it doesn't take up all the space in our mind, because there's other space which is open, which is not it, and the space of awareness, the space of knowing, the space of being, space of life. And it's a lot of the practices we're doing here is that. And it may seem not that interesting. Well, Ma, how many times can I listen to the birds? Because the teachers say, listen to the birds. So, Ma, and you say, because they call a yom lishmo adatsipurim. Ma, speak li, Ma, Ma, yomim. But it's not. It's about giving a bigger importance to life. It's about life taking some space in us rather than our issues. It's about the breathing telling us we're alive. It's about, yes, the trees and the birds saying, you forgot us. You're so busy with your issues. In Yanim, you forgot us. The trees are saying that. You forgot the earth. The earth is saying that. The body is saying that. The body is telling us, you forgot me until I hurt. Then when I have hurt, you take an Akamol so you can forget me again. That's what the body says. So this life point of view is really can save us. It's really beautiful, because in life there's nothing missing. In life itself, nothing missing. Nothing missing. Lo chaser shum davar. Life itself. In our interpretation, okay, plenty of problems, but in life itself, it's just life. As much as we can feel that, this point of view of life, that we feel it in the body and in the, we'll be in a bigger place, we'll be in a freer place. And we have a different perspective. We understand that our experiences are not really ours. They come to us from the universe. The universe brings us problems, triggers, hashpa'ot, conditions, issues. There is an old Zen story of a Zen teacher. A student comes to the teacher and said, I have a lot of anger. How do I deal with the anger? And the teacher says, bring it. And bring your anger and we'll deal with it. The student says, yeah, but the rega hazeh ainli. At this moment, I haven't got anger. So the teacher says, so go to your room, and when you have next anger, bring it, and we'll deal with it. And the student said, yes, but it takes 10 minutes from my room to your room. In that 10 minutes, the anger will probably go. So how do we deal with it? He said, you've already dealt with it. Even if you want your anger, you cannot get it. Because anger comes from the universe. Anger comes from the universe, from triggers that make anger. It's not yours, it just comes from the world. So there, that's how to deal with it. I'd rather not, I'd rather finish. And and the same with thought. Thought, do they really belong to us or do they come from somewhere else? Are they not the voices that we've been picking up all our life from everybody? Are they really originally our thoughts, or are they rewriting of all the stuff we're getting, the processing of the stuff that's coming in? So they're coming in a way from the universe as well. We think they're my thought, but really, if you look carefully, they too are coming, a voice is coming in from the world. So if we go far and deep with this place of being made by the world, and not really being a fixed person, separate and defined, we're in a space of basically a liberated space, a space of awakening, a space of the Buddha, the space behind things, space in the room here, space around everything, the space that is not our issues and our problems and our world, in a filling us, something to do with the space of life itself that is bigger than us. And we can't expect, just because we're in a retreat of a few days, we can't expect that it's a total dramatic, well, it can happen, but it's usually we experience this sense of freedom or space in moments, should we say, moments of chesed. And that is happening. That is happening. Right here, it is happening to us. Having a different point of view about our stuff. It is happening. I'd like to read a text. So someone said, how do you recognize an awakened person? A student asked the Buddha. And the Buddha answered, it's like a flame that's gone out by a gust of wind. By a wind, said the Buddha. It, in a moment, it has gone out and you can't know anything more about it, the flame. It's the same with a man who is freed from mental formations. In a flash, he's gone out, and you can't know anything more about him or her. So someone says, in a short, the Buddha asked the Buddha, how can you recognize an enlightened person? And the Buddha answered, you recognize them because you can't find them. You recognize an enlightened person because you can't find them. And this is the answer that the Buddha said, you can't find them because they've gone out. And so the student said, I don't understand. Has the man disappeared? Or the woman? Does he not exist anymore? Or is he in some other state beyond? And the Buddha said, when a person has gone out, then there is nothing by which you can measure them. That by which he can be talked about is no longer there. You cannot say that he doesn't exist. When all ways of being, all phenomena are undone, then all ways of describing things also undone. So in other words, maybe it's a bit complex the way it's written there, but the Buddha answered, the person still is there, but the ordinary mind that describes the person and the thought and the mental functions don't work anymore. So you can't find the person anymore. It's not, the person isn't definable. You can't label this person anyway. Just leave it as being a kind of a sense of not knowing, mystery. Okay, just leave it like that. In our practice, we explore these things in small moments, and it's helpful to come down off the big issues and the big picture and the big things troubling us and go into the small moments of our life. This breath, this touch, this thought, this bird, this moment, my feet taking me here, my feet taking me there. And actually, we live in small moments. We don't live in, if we actually ask how, where do I live? We live in small moments. We live in this moment of taste of tea. We live in this moment of getting up, brushing our teeth. That's how we live. We have narratives in the mind, which are the big stories, but the where we actually live is in small moments all the time. And here we're practicing looking at those small moments. It's helpful to come down off the, because they're, Redmiya 8s of big stories, and just see this life, this moment. It's helpful to ask questions. It's helpful to check out things. Exactly from what I was saying before, the sense that things are known is an illusion based on constructions that we've made. So we've made constructions and decided this is a bell. It's more helpful for us to really ask, what is this? Not so easy to see objects outside as being mystery, because it's so immediate. This is a bell. What the hell are you talking about? But objects inside, feelings, thoughts, conclusions, concepts, it's easier. And we ask ourselves, is it really like that? Is that really so? Bemet kacha, something that's bugging us for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. Oh, it's just such a rega rega. Is it really so? What is it made of? This experience, this mood I'm having, this matzav ruach, what's it made of? Everything, like I said, like the Buddha said, all compounded things, everything is made of something else, and it's impermanent. Soon as we really ask these questions, what's it made of? This obsessive thinking, machshava todani, that is going round and round. What are you made of? What's driving you? What's maintaining you? Are you really like that? Do I really know who you are? Sometimes for us here in the practice, it's good to know that thought and heart feelings go totally together. The word citta. So citta upasana. Vipassana of citta means vipassana of mind and heart. So we started the retreat a lot with the body, but in a natural way, we're moving to mind and heart. And they are intimate. Mind and heart are together. So very often states of We're thinking, 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 but we don't notice that it's feeling that's driving thought. So it's good to know that. I'm just giving you a tip where if you have a lot of thought going around, go back down and say, what's driving this thought? What's the feeling maybe behind it? What's the source? When Ilan talked about aggregates, he's actually talking about the same as I'm talking about tonight, but it gives it the aggregates or the mitzarfim are the kind of the Buddhist neurology, brain science of the Buddha. So it divides up experience into these elements, but it's the same. Namely, an experience is made up of other things. Body, perception, feelings, memory, learning, consciousness, the five aggregates. It's just the way that everything that we experience is made up of those things. And our practice is really to undo the constructions, just to undo. The Buddha said all the aggregates, we can see them as being like the bubbles that appear when a drop of rain hits the concrete, the ground. When the rain hits the ground, it makes a little bubble. We can look at our aggregates, the elements of experience like that. And it's really, we just have to keep going and looking at everything as being made up of other things. In the text, nun maybe I'll go into it, but briefly, Mara is in the texts. There is Mara, who is a kind of the ordinary mind that keeps popping up. And even to the Buddha, the ordinary mind kept appearing. And the ordinary mind appearing, saying, forget it. Oh, you think you're special. Oh, never mind. Oh. So the ordinary mind appeared to this enlightened woman and said, you think you're so clever? Tell me who made you. Which God made you? And the woman turned to Mara and said, your question is based on a totally unreal assumption. And the assumption is that I exist as a person. So how I cannot, it's a total unreal assumption that I exist as a person. So the whole question is totally not relevant. Because I'm not a person, I'm made of elements. I'm made of all the pieces that made me. So where's the person? So who made me? The whole question is not relevant anymore. And you can ask that about anything. Who's winning the European Cup, football cup? Wait a minute. What's this football match? What's it made of? What's all the elements? There's a ball, there's a player, there's a grass, there's a this. Is there a football match? Or is there hundreds of elements that go together and I'm sitting back watching TV and saying, a football match? Okay, it's fine to watch football, but because everything is made up of other things and is dynamic and not fixed, whenever the Buddha was asked kind of direct questions, about this or that. Is there a self or is there no self? He shut up. Is there a goral, fate, or is it all chaos? He shut up. Is there something in the world? Or is it all empty? Tohu va-bohu. And we make a world. There is no world. It's just our fantasy. He shut up. And all the time he said, if I go into the statements about the world, it's just confusing everybody. Because there is, these dualities are confusing and not helpful, because every moment is dynamically built and there is all the time, everything is in this minute made of other things. Conditions make this situation. We're in here, this, all of us here, sitting together, listening to Dharma, a person talking. Millions of conditions are needed to make this thing happen right now. In fact, the whole universe is needed for this moment to exist. Without the whole universe being what it is, this moment wouldn't be here. So we can't say anything about it is or is not. It's all being made all the time, everything. It's all a bit theoretical. Leave it a bit as a mystery, but take home the message of the dynamic nature of our experience and the importance of giving space and what happens then. So I want to read finally just an inspiring poem called, and it's about mystery, and it's called The Last Koan. You know what a koan is? It's from the Japanese tradition, the Zen tradition. It's a question that is just out there. It's like, instead of what the Buddha said, there is or there isn't, there is the koan, which is the question that has no real answer. It's just a question that opens reality. Why am I here? This has been a gnawing question for a long time. Do not ask anyone to answer this. There are too many beliefs out there that kill the great mystery. Tonight, stay awake for a while. Wrap your body in a warm blanket. Gaze into the sky, the infinite cosmos, and the magic of existence will open your mind. Your heart will feel a sweet surrender. Aren't you everything? You are the body of the universe, with countless stars shining brilliantly. You are the beautiful flowers in this world. You are the gentle, spirited dolphins swimming ecstatically in the sea. You are the unbelievable hummingbirds. You have never been born. You are here all along. You are here to see your own wonder. Now you can rest from searching for eternity somewhere else. So here is the koan again, just for you. Why am I here? Keep contemplating this forever. Otherwise you'll become finite. Fear and struggle will steal your joy. In the East, people have been chanting the sacred mantra Om. Till now, few know its meaning. If they really know what it meant, they would dance without control. Remember, Om means I am everything, and let your body dance like a child playing. Beautiful poem by Anam Tubten, is a Tibetan teacher. So let's take a moment of quiet.